He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're getting you all caught up on SEC hot seats. Hot.
All of them. Except for Derek Mason at Vanderbilt.
Well, and that so this
shockingly.
We'll jump right into it. I mean, because the problem with it sometimes is expectation versus reality. I think everybody expects that they're going to be something, and they're just not. So, you know, there's a point where Arkansas fans can expect all day that they're going to win the SEC. That doesn't happen. That's not where they are. That's not who they are.
Literally and never has happened.
So you have to sort of curb your expectations. And I don't know if that's possible in today's college football landscape. It's probably not possible. But you have some data that sort of lays out who teams are. So when you start to look at this and you start to look at what the identity of certain teams are, what coaches stand out to you that are on the hot seat that shouldn't be?
Well, Sumlin was an interesting one because when you look at his record, there is a lot to like there, and he's done a good job, and he's recruited at a high level, and they've rebuilt so much of it, but there is sort of this, hey, what's the next step? And I think that goes to he had such great success in year one with Johnny Manziel. Was that just Johnny Manziel? I mean, was that just some transcendent player that just did that? Butch Jones has done it a totally different way. He built a roster from a complete dumpster fire and has built them up to a 9-win team. Texas A&M, for Tennessee fans that are unhappy with 9-win seasons, from 99 to 2011, from their Big 12 championship until joining the SEC, Texas A&M had 2 9-win seasons. No 10-win seasons, just 2 9-win seasons. That Tennessee's done that in the last 2 years. So the expectations, I think, are at certain levels. And Tennessee has had 5 trips to the SEC championship game in 25 years. Georgia has had 5 trips to the SEC championship game in 25 years. LSU has had 5 trips to the SEC championship game in 25 years. And Auburn has had 5 trips to the SEC championship game in 25 years. Is there a theme here with these 4 teams?
Right.
Expectations should be about the same for LSU, Georgia, Tennessee, and Auburn. Once every 5 years, they go to the SEC championship game. That's about what's happened.
And I want to stress, that's just go to the championship game.
Right.
That's not win the championship.
LSU's 4-1, Tennessee 2-3, Georgia 2-3, Auburn 3-2. So essentially, Auburn has had 1 SEC title every 8 years. Tennessee and Georgia have had 1 every 12 years. And again, we know that those happened in different – I know Tennessee's were back-to-back in 97-98. Georgia's were 02 and 05. I'm just saying let's extrapolate out the data and look at 25 years of modern SEC play since 92 – and say, what is a reasonable expectation for your program? And all these teams have competed for, other than Georgia, all these teams have played a national title game. That's the other difference. And then the other two at the top are Bama and Florida. Florida has had 1 losing season since 1992. That's crazy. 1 losing season. We all remember Georgia Southern and that year and 4-8 and getting fired by where Will Muschamp got fired. Alabama has been to 11 SEC championship games, so once every 2 years. And Florida has been to 12 SEC championship games once every 2 years. So Florida and Alabama sort of are on their own when it comes to how many times did those fan bases, should those fan bases expect to get to Atlanta? Every other year, basically. It's not the same for Auburn, Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee. It's once every 5 years for them. And the expectation should be for Butch Jones, for Kirby Smart, for Coach Orgeron, and for Gus Malzahn, is probably once every 4 years. I'm gonna round up and go once every 4 years. Just to raise expectations a little bit so that the fans aren't super angry about this. I don't think Tennessee fans or Georgia fans or LSU fans or Auburn fans would be happy with 1 every 5 years.
Well, and that's amazing.
But that's the facts.
And what are they based – what is that based on? Like, we talked yesterday about what fans expect, and so much of it's based on competitiveness, right? And so you start to sit there and say, well, if you're a Patriots fan, at some point, the Patriots will decline. It happens to every team. Nobody thought the 49ers would ever decline during the Joe Montana years, Steve Young years that followed that. At some point, you hit the decline. And when you hit the decline, I understand your lack of patience with it, your lack of satisfaction with it. I understand that moment because you're so used to it. If you're a Vols fan and you're coming in and saying, you know, it's SEC title or bust, based on what? I mean, how long has it been since they won an SEC title?
Like, 98, yeah.
I mean, there's a point where you're 20 years removed from your – essentially, you're 19 years removed from your last SEC title.
Now, here's the question is what chunk of that 19 years? Because Georgia's last title was 05, right? But I don't think people realize this. It's been almost a decade since Florida won a title. I mean, crazy. 08 was the last time Florida won an SEC championship. Now, some of that is Nick Saban. Nick right. Saban has just dominated and won like five of the last eight or whatever it is. LSU got the one in 2011, and Auburn got two of them with Cam Newton in 2010 and then in 2013 on the fluky. Otherwise, that would have been Alabama because the kick six in Auburn, and then they beat Missouri. So the question is what's reasonable expectation for these teams? And it, frankly, the SEC East being down and Nick Saban being Nick Saban has flipped the balance. There was a time in the 90s from 93 to like 98 where the SEC East won every single SEC championship and nobody from the West won. LSU had 30 years of being completely irrelevant. From 1970 to Nick Saban, LSU was irrelevant in the SEC. So the one program that stands out that has underachieved with a team that's been good is Georgia. Georgia's the one team that sort of – 12 double-digit win seasons since 92. Haven't won a title since 05. Now, if they don't lose to Tennessee in 07, which was a shellacking in Neyland Stadium, they went 11-2, and that was the Matt Stafford team that smoked Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl. They probably were better than LSU, who ended up winning a national title. So had they not lost to Tennessee, they probably would have beaten LSU in the SEC championship game, played for a national title, maybe won it. Obviously, 2012, they're 5 yards shy of beating Alabama in the SEC championship game. They would have probably gone on to beat Notre Dame. So Mark Richt was close, very close. But the reason he's not there is because they win 10 games all the time and don't win SEC championships. So that is the reason with Georgia, and that's the expectation that falls on Kirby Smart. It's just not right now because I don't think you can ask – like, you're not going to get fired after 2 years.
Right, Kirby Smart is safe right now. Right. I mean, the interesting thing to me is less about Kirby Smart and more about so many of the guys that you've mentioned. And I don't think you can put enough weight on the fact that, like you said, you're in a period of dominance for Nick Saban. Obviously, what that means is that if you're used to winning an SEC title every, whatever, 5 years, if you're used to winning one every 5 years, you happen to be up against a brick wall, so you're not going to get that every 5 years. You know, if you're the Vols, you're looking at it and saying, "Hey, I just want to get there, right? Like, I just want to be there." If you're Florida, they expect to get there at this point. I don't know that Florida fans can realistically step back and say it's win an SEC title or bust because they're just not going to be in
well.
That.
And that's what Pete Futak's question was raising yesterday: is 9-3, 10-3, but winning the SEC East, but not really being competitive? Although they 2 years ago. That was a relatively close game with Alabama, I guess. It wasn't really ever in doubt, but is not being competitive against the best two teams you play every year, which is probably Florida State and Alabama. At least it has been in the last couple of years under Jim McElwain. Not being competitive with those two, that's the next step for Florida. Well, Jim McElwain's already shown that he can win the East because he's done it twice. Now he's got to go take the next step, and that's the pressure for Jim McElwain is – and that's why there's questions about his recruiting. Can you do that with the 20th-rated recruiting class? Well, maybe that's the issue with the Florida fans and Jim McElwain is recruiting. Can you get to that next level? Well, so all these coaches have that next level that they're supposed to reach. And I don't – in a 5 or 6 year window where Nick Saban has basically dominated everything in the last 5 or 6 years, the problem is also where are you coming from? And Tennessee is coming from the worst 5 year window or 4 year window in the last 30 years or 40 years. I mean, Tennessee won at an amazing clip in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and even through the early 2000s. But with Lane Kiffin and Derek Dooley, they hit a historic low. You know that Tennessee hasn't had a season with at least, I looked this up, the last time they had a 4-win season was 1977. They've had at least 5 wins every year for almost 40 years. That's pretty good. So the expectation for Tennessee is different in Butch Jones because of how bad they were before he got there, which maybe is unfair, but it also means they're bloodthirsty right now in Knoxville, and that's rightly so.
But I think it's actually very fair to keep that in consideration. I'll always go back to my life as a Raiders fan. Growing up, the Raiders entered the 2000s, and if you looked at their win-loss percentage, they were the winningest franchise in all of sports going into the 2000s. From their inception to the 2000s, if you took that 40-year period, winningest franchise in all of sports. And then they went through 13 years where they didn't even sniff the playoffs, and they were a terrible team. So when the Raiders are good again, you can't come back and say, yeah, well, back in the 80s and right. 90s, look at what we did. Like, that's
a different
generations
sport. It's
ago.
Different
and
yeah.
You have to look at it and say, hey, this is not your dad's Vols. This is not your grandfather's Vols. And it's not the Vols you watched as a little kid. This is a new era in college football that's substantially different. It raises a question of what the expectations should be, because, again, we've identified what different programs are, and maybe everybody's lost sight of what the Vols really are going into this season, because if you have, I think your expectations for Butch are all wrong. We'll talk about that. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Want to go to the 2017 ESPYs?
Oh!
What happened?
I'm just covering
there?
That for
YouTube,
you too.
Man. Google Chrome just crashed again. Oh. Always, I'm
gotta
sorry.
Feed the hamster, man.
Well, you know what? While Julian is lamenting the music crash, I thought it was abrupt, and he was just setting me up for the ESPYs. Want to go to the 2017 ESPYs? You know, like fly to L.A., walk the red carpet, go to the big party. How about going as the guest of this year's host, Peyton Manning? OMG. Make a donation to the V Foundation for Cancer Research as little as $20. You could win an incredible ESPYs trip and the chance to meet Peyton Manning at a rehearsal before the show. Go to ebay.com/ESPN to donate. Just $20 for your chance to win. That's ebay.com/ESPN. No purchases necessary. Sweepstake ends Thursday, June 29th. Go to ebay.com/ESPN.
This sounds like a music that would play over like an ESPYs montage.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah.
They've been playing for the College World Series.
At some point, somehow.
Shooting the Lion, Nashville Natives.
There you go.
We'll have to.
You should watch Game 2 tonight, Fitzy. It's great. It's an
not
awesome
a
sport.
I mean,
College World Series.
There's, like, there's no chance. There's zero
it's
chance.
It's such a good event.
I would love to, but however, there's probably reruns of Family Guy that I've already seen 300 times on, and I can't resist.
I get it. You don't like baseball. It's fine.
Is House Hunters on tonight, though?
What?
If there's a new House Hunters, and that's fine.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with Big Beach Build. I'm going to go with that one.
Big Beach Build.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I saw it yesterday.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Okay, a couple of tweets have come in. Ramal says, are these Butch Jones players? He recruited all these guys. I know where he's going with that. And Zach came in and said, Vols in 2017 are a 7-11 win team, plus minus four with seven wins being their worst. That's a heck of a plus minus, Zach. I mean, that's a big range. They're going to win somewhere between 7 and 11 games.
That's the difference between getting fired and getting a raise. Right. I mean, that's the difference.
Well, and you guys know that I've been squarely on the, mostly because I dug my line in the sand, I've been squarely on the Vols finished fourth in the East. But that's more about the fact that I just don't necessarily look at the Vols right now and have a lot of belief in several things that need to develop. That doesn't mean, by the way, that I think that Butch Jones should be fired, which I think is also alarming to people. I think that Butch Jones would get fired for that sort of a season. But again, what did we just talk about? Like the history of the program, the way the program works. At some point, you are who you are. It doesn't matter. You can put in all sorts of different coaches. You can put in different systems. You can try and change the culture. But a 25-year history lesson will show you are who you are. And your 25-year history lesson for the Vols says – you know, every 5 years they go to an SEC title game on average,
therein lies the rub. They haven't been since 07. So it's been 10 years. They haven't won since 98. It's been 20 years. There is a bloodthirsty element to this, and some of that is Lane Kiffin and Derek Dooley destroyed the program,
right?
And they had to rebuild from that. But at some point, you cannot use that as an excuse. At some point, you do have to get over that on your own as the head coach with Butch Jones. Is that going to be this year with the current roster? I don't know. Is it going to be next year? And I said this on I guess it was Porth in the GM yesterday. Ryan in the GM.
Ryan in the GM sounds good.
Ryan in the GM.
Should we make that a permanent show?
Ryan in the GM. So I was on
featuring Jared Stillman,
and it was all about, you know, if Jared Garantano eventually takes the job this year and is the starting quarterback and proves that he's a quality option at that position at some point during the year, midway through whatever it may be, he sort of establishes himself as the starter. There will be a lot of expectation about him for the next year in 2018. How many bodies are coming back there? This Tennessee team has got a lot of good pieces to it. There's a lot to like about this current Tennessee team. Quarterback is a question mark, is an unknown. It could be great. It could be awful. We're not sure. I think they're better off at that position than people think. The defensive line is the bigger area of concern for me. If they're healthy, they're going to be really good. If they're not healthy, people are going to run the ball down their throat. You know, and that's what's going to happen when you play LSUs of the world and Alabama and Georgia and Florida. There's much better quarterback play in the SEC this year. And Tennessee is taking a step back at that position. And that's where do the expectations and that bloodthirstiness that comes with, like you're saying, the stats say once every 5 years. Well, it's been 10 since they went. And it's been 20 since they won. So there is a you need to get over the hump very soon element. The question is it fair to ask that of any coach that has to play Nick Saban in the championship game? It's like the Predators. Had they gotten Ottawa, I would have felt totally different about the Stanley Cup final. But you didn't. You got Nick Saban. You got the Pittsburgh Penguins. And beating the Pittsburgh Penguins is a lot different than beating the Ottawa Senators.
Now, I'm not making the comparison. I want to be clear here before I say what I'm about to say. I'm not comparing the two programs. I'm not comparing the money behind the programs or the fan interest behind the programs. I'm just going to say this.
Okay.
I went to high school outside of D.C. in Maryland and went to University of Maryland games. I was one of the, like, six people that would go to some Terps games.
Testudo.
For football, because that's very much a basketball school. But I would say this. They have invested over the years to try and make the football program better. It has not gotten better. They can sit there all day long and say, we have got to get over the hump. But the fact of the matter is, you can say that all day, and you can try all day to make that happen. But even if Maryland were to get over the hump, the fact that they would then go into any sort of a conference opportunity to win a championship and have to play, I don't know, like an Urban Meyer, would make that very difficult for them to do, taking on a Harbaugh-type Meyer situation.
Well, so, Maryland would be sort of the Mississippi State.
Right. I know they're not equivalent programs, but my greater point is you can wish it, you can dream it, you can hope it, and every college program does. But the fact is, if you're sitting here banking on the Vols winning an SEC championship in the next few years to be sort of that vindicating thing, man, I'm sorry, you're going to have a rough few years. Just start mowing the lawn on Saturdays.
And unfortunately, I think that may apply to a lot of people, and that's the difference. That's what makes Nick Saban Nick Saban. Maryland's is actually a really good example, because they're in the division with Nick Saban, right? Like, they're in the division. Maryland has Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, and Michigan in their division. They're never going to win that. If they win that division, that guy should get a statue at Maryland. So it's all about expectations. And again, when you look at the history, Tennessee, Florida, and Georgia, they're the ones who win the East. They're the ones who compete for SEC championships. They're the ones who still do that. Now, Missouri's slid in there a couple of times, sort of snuck in, and South Carolina got one. And that's the indication of the East being down in the last 5 to 6 years. Some of that was Tennessee being awful. Georgia was actually pretty good in 2011, 2012. Almost won a national title in 2012. Florida won its two national titles in the late 2000s, 06 and 08. Tennessee's the one out of the three that hasn't cycled back up yet. And Georgia almost cycled back up, and they still fired Mark Richt to move on to Kirby Smart. So I think it's fair to say expectations are out of control in the SEC, but that's what makes the SEC is they're all kind of crazy about their sport, and they all expect to win championships. And, 13 of them are going to be upset at the end of the year. That's the way it works.
I love the idea of saying, hey, we got to win the East. Like, I think that's a really good expectation for this program, saying, hey, we want to be on a track to consistently have the opportunity to win the East. And if that's everybody's mindset, I think that that's attainable. I don't think that's attainable this year, but I do think that's attainable.
So the first step in winning a championship is competing for a championship.
Right. Okay. The first step in comfort as a fan is just accepting the fact that, like I used the analogy yesterday, you stopped at the gas station, you got a scratch-off ticket. You got it for fun. All right. If you happen to win some scratch off cash, woo! That's what you're looking at. If you get to the SEC championship game, that's what you want. If you happen to scratch it off and find a way to miraculously beat Bama, good on you.
Well, and I think that's the point we made yesterday with Alabama. Think about why Alabama hasn't won championships since Nick Saban took over. Other than 2010, which is like their 1 year where they were like, oh, 10-4. Like the 1 year where they were like 9-3 or whatever it was, they lost more than two games. Think about the ways Alabama didn't win championships. Well, in 2013, it took a kick six, right? They've won three championships since then. They won the championship in 12. They didn't win the SEC championship in 2011, but they won the national championship.
Yeah.
In 2000. The 1 year they didn't win the SEC title, they still won the national championship. And they won it in 09. And they were in the game against Tebow in 08. So Tebow, here's how you beat Alabama in SEC play. You have one of the most miraculous plays in the history of the sport, the kick six. You have one of the greatest players in the history of the sport, Tim Tebow, or you beat them 9-6 in Tuscaloosa on a really weird game and then happen to lose to them in the national title game. Like, those are the only ways Alabama has been beaten, really, other than 2010, which is their 1 year where they rebuilt after 09. Every other year since Saban took over, from 08 to 2016, has been dominated by Alabama, and it's taken a crazy player or a crazy play to knock them off. So it's not fair to expect championships from Jim McElwain, Kirby Smart, and Butch Jones. It's fair to get to Atlanta every 5 years. I think that is fair, and Tennessee has not been back since 07, and that is why Tennessee fans are restless.
Well, all of that makes sense. I'm just trying to help everybody reset a little bit of expectation so that everybody can find joy this fall in what should be a delightful college football season.
You're talking about SEC football fans. You know that, right?
I know. I just want people to be happy.
Okay.
I want everybody to be happy. Barrett Salee, always happy. Barrett's going to join us up next. We'll get his thoughts on the SEC coaching situation, on expectations for the Vols, and whatever else might come up. We'll do that with Barrett Salee up next. I'm Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Said I'm pulling down the shades for the long ride.
For all the latest news, coverage, everything sports in Tennessee, like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitters and the Instagrams. The Twits is at 102.5 The Game. It's my new thing. The Insta at The Game Nashville. Download our app, The Game Nashville. Listen to Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 The Game. You can get to all of that through the app. If you missed any of the show, too, on demand, you can get to a bunch of it. We are efforting Barrett Salee, who will be joining us any moment. Uno momento.
John Mark Roberts on Twitter points out, you guys forgot to mention Ole Miss beating Bama back-to-back. And that is true. And they were – Bama would have been knocked out of the SEC championship game had Hunter Henry not thrown the ball back up in the air over his head, and Alex Collins picks it up and beats Ole Miss in some crazy way, and then they go for it on the two-point conversion. But even those two games where Ole Miss beat them, one of those was Alabama had five turnovers, and Ole Miss had the ball inside Alabama's 30 like four times, and Alabama still almost came back and won. And the other one was Bo Wallace making a brilliant touchdown throw at the end of the game to win the game. So the point is that it takes sort of not freakish and flukish things, easy for me to say. It just takes something extraordinary.
Yeah, a little bit of luck.
Beat Alabama. And that's not – like, listen, this isn't rocket science. They've got the best players and they're the best coach and it's the best team. Like, they're going to be hard to beat. Like, that makes sense.
I'm not saying they can't be beaten. I'm just saying that if your goal is to be the best team in the SEC, which should be – when you say SEC champion, you're thinking, we're going to be the best in the SEC. If your goal is to be so good that you believe that on a neutral field in Atlanta you could beat Alabama more times than they could beat you if you played 100 times, that's not going to happen. Now, you get to Atlanta, maybe the sun shines, and maybe a broken clock is right twice a day. Maybe you can get to that
Maybe there's a kick six, or Deshaun Watson throws a pass to Hunter Renfrow, or whatever.
You know, maybe the entire team gets the bird flu in the morning, and suddenly, bam, you've got an SEC title. There's ways. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm just saying you can't really count on it to happen if that's your goal. I mean, if your goal is to be the best team.
Oh, that pesky bird flu.
The bird flu always gets
South
you.
Carolina always gets in the way.
Well,
I think it's what's interesting. When Nick Saban retires is what I can't – like, I'm almost looking forward to – like, I think he's the greatest coach ever in college football because I think winning as much as he's done in this era is way more difficult than winning when Bear Bryant won. Or when, you know, some of these other great Hall of Fame coaches were winning. I think the modern era is a more difficult, more balanced, more parity-driven college football sport in general. So that's why I think Saban, what he's accomplished, is even more impressive, and it makes him the greatest coach, in my opinion, of all time. So when he steps away, the power vacuum in the SEC could be spectacular to watch. I mean, that's what could be spectacular. Is when Nick Saban walks away, let's say it's in 4 years, right? And half these guys are still employed because they're all going 9-3 and they're just barely hanging on, keeping their jobs, right? Gus Malzahn's still around. Butch Jones is still around. Let's just, you know, Kirby Smart, Jim McElwain, still around. And in 3 years, Nick Saban walks away. First of all, so many more players are now available.
Right.
All these five stars are now going to go to these other places. And all of a sudden, you've got six or seven teams that think they deserve to win the SEC championship on a regular basis. That the power struggle to fill that when that – it's like when the cartel head falls, like when Pablo Escobar is taken down, there's like three or four guys that are trying to take the head of the family. Like that's what's going to happen in the SEC when Nick Saban retires. It will be like a mafia power struggle to try to find who's the best. And that's when this conference could be unbelievable. I mean, it's already great and entertaining, but like you
– Oh, that no, that's the
That
moment.
Chaos is going to be spectacular. The first 2 years after Nick Saban retires is going to be just – fighting and grappling for real estate atop the SEC.
I'm going to buy in that there's a big group text with all of the coaches, and he's just keeping them informed. He's like, hey, guys, 3 more years. And everybody's just looking at it. They're sitting down with their wives. They're like, I just got to make it 3 more years.
See, I think it's the other way. Because I've been reading Don Winslow. If you care about drug cartels in South America and Mexico, read Don Winslow. And I think it's the other way around. I think they're all on a text chain without Nick Saban.
Oh, okay.
Trying to plan how to take Nick Saban down in, like, roundabout, weird, like, coup sort of ways where they're trying to figure out, like, all right, let's get Miss Terry a job as the governor of Florida.
Oh.
Let's see if we can do that, and then maybe they'll move to Florida and Nick Saban won't work.
Two words.
Like,
two words. You minimize Nick Saban. Bird flu. Again, I mean, that's the bird
let's
flu
offer
is a
him, let's offer him the presidency, and now I'm like House of Cards, too. Now, let's offer him the presidency of Little Debbie. Let's see if he'll leave Alabama to be the president and CEO of Little Debbie.
What if all of the other coaches in the SEC just pooled 1 year salary and said, hey, here's a buyout for you? I mean, it's just
– his salary is $10 million now, 11.4 or whatever.
So you think about what all of the rest of the SEC coaches make, you pool that together. I mean,
here's what I think you could do, though. You don't
assistants
even need,
and head coaches.
You don't even need the coaches' money. If you went to an Auburn booster meeting, if you went to a Tennessee booster meeting, you got all the other booster clubs together. Georgia, Arkansas, A&M. Like Michigan's booster, there was one guy who wrote a check for the million-dollar trip to Italy, right? Like Jim Harbaugh took Michigan to Italy. One guy wrote the check for $1 million and didn't even want credit for it. First of all, that's cool. Second of all, that's the type of power that there are at all these big programs. If you got all these booster meetings together in the SEC and they all said, all right, what could we come up with to buy out Nick Saban to retire? $35 million?
I mean,
$25 million. I bet you if I said, all right, SEC boosters come up with $30 million, Nick Saban will go away. I bet you the SEC
it'd take
fans
less than a day.
I bet
by tomorrow morning.
I bet you they'd find it.
By tomorrow morning.
There would be a GoFundMe page.
Oh, yeah.
Let's make Nick Saban retire fund. And I guarantee you that the rest of the SEC boosters, John Ingram would be like, I'll write the check.
Yeah. No, we're all in. I mean, everybody, the GoFundMe is a great idea because every SEC fan will put in $5. All right. So we got Barrett Salee joining us, obviously, one of the great minds in college football. We love having Barrett on. Barrett, we're trying to, thanks for giving us some time this morning, man. We're trying to plan a way that we could go to all the other boosters in the SEC and get them to buy out Nick Saban. Do you think we have a shot?
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't have to ask that question much to get to raise that kind of money. Because, I mean, look, Nick Saban is, I think, at least thinking about retirement. I'm not saying he's going to do it this year or next year, but he's certainly, you know, in that stage now where he's thinking about when's the right time. If you can offer him $50 million, that'll make it the right time.
I think we could revolutionize SEC football. Yeah, we finished it.
Well, and this is what I always say, Barrett. Like, if there were like an Auburn computer geek hacker that like had some dirt on Nick Saban, it would already be out by now. Like, they would have already done that.
Without a doubt. Oh, I mean, I think you have to sort of define what dirt is, because in the coaching industry, I think it may be different than others. I would imagine if there's something that could sink Nick Saban, it would pretty much be out at this point. And raising enough money to buy him out is an interesting idea. I mean, you could probably wrap that into a charity too with some of these boosters and at other schools and say, all right, look, if you give us a mill, you know, 25% is going to go to a charity, so you can use it as a tax write-off because you're going to be able to get as much as you want from a lot of these.
Barrett, forcing Nick Saban to retire is charity work. Like, that's charity work for the rest of the SEC. That's what that is.
That is true. That's a good point.
I mean, if we're going to save the world and save the SEC, I don't know what I'm going to do on tomorrow's show. This is just landmark. I mean,
you're doing a whole lot of good at that point, right?
Yeah. So Barrett, let me ask you, because we're trying to wrap our head around, let's call it reasonable expectations. I know that doesn't exist much in the SEC fandom world, but what do you think are reasonable expectations this year for Butch Jones at Tennessee?
I think a reasonable expectation should be 8-4, but a solid 8-4. I think Tennessee fans know better than most folks now. Not all 8-4 seasons are created equal. Last year's was way different than 2015. So an 8-4 season with that schedule, with the holes on that roster and, the gauntlet you have to run through, I think for Tennessee fans, if it's managed properly and it looks like Butch Jones sort of has a grasp on actually how to be a big-time head coach, then that's okay. But 8-4, like last year, where he looks completely lost, he loses stars mid-season, and there's just no identity to the program, then that gets him fired. So I think that's what you have to look for. I don't think a number is necessarily what Tennessee fans need to worry about right now, because it's a retooling year. I mean, think everybody looking at that program will look and say, all right, it's a little bit of a retooling year. But how you look while retooling is a huge deal. And if they look like, you know, they're set for the future, and you have the feeling that Butch Jones can actually handle being a big-time head coach in this league, then you're fine. But, again, if you look the other way and look like you're completely incompetent and incapable of functioning as a big-time program, then Butch Jones will be looking for work.
Who's under the most pressure when you look around the league? You know, you got Butch Jones, you just talked about it, but Kevin Sumlin, Hugh Freeze facing investigation, Gus Malzahn, Kirby Smart, Jim McElwain. Who are the guys that should be the most worried right now?
I mean, I think it's Kevin Sumlin and Butch Jones. I mean, you know, because Kevin Sumlin has reached a point in his career where, for the most part, you sort of are what your record is. You know, again, not all miserable seasons or average seasons are created equal. I think last year, you know, had a lot to do with the injuries to Myles Garrett. But, you know, he hasn't been over 500 since Johnny Manziel's first season. So at some point, you're just going to have to sort of be who you are. Now, that said, you know, again, if they're 8-4 in the SEC West with Kellen Mond, a true freshman at quarterback, that's gonna raise a few eyebrows. So, but I think both of those guys, Sumlin and Butch Jones, are the ones that really have to keep an eye out, because they're in that situation, in that sort of discussion where, you know, it is about feel. And when it's about feel, then you never know which way powerful boosters are gonna side. I don't think Malzahn's under nearly the amount of pressure as people are making it out to be. I think last year people recognized, and the people in the program recognized, they've got a solid foundation. I think Jim McElwain and Kirby Smart are interesting, because Jim McElwain is, you know, the East titles are nice, but it's very Muschampian the way he's won the East titles, and that's not what he was hired to do. So it's more about how that offense looks. I mean, he's not going to get fired, but, I mean, it certainly could set the tone for whatever happens next year, depending on how they look offensively. Another guy that's in sort of the same boat is Brett Bielema. I don't think he's under any pressure right now, but after year five, you have to be better than just okay, and they've really just been okay throughout the course of his entire career, save for the first year when they went 0-8 in the SEC.
So, Barrett, we keep talking about expectations of fans and these guys keeping their jobs, but what about the opposite side of it? If you've got a Tennessee team that plays well and exceeds some expectations and maybe finds a way to win 9 games this year, what do you think the chances are Butch Jones just turns around and looks at it and says, you know what, I don't need all this drama, I'm out?
Well, I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, I think all coaches now, because – since they're in big time spots, sometimes they do look for the golden parachutes, because they understand, I think, more now than maybe 10 years ago, that, you know, you only have a short shelf life at every job. You know, you're going to lose boosters even if you win, you know, because of the way, you know, people like to control the narrative in certain schools. So I think Butch, you know, if he goes 9-3 and there's a job that maybe he's a little more stable out there, he certainly would be open to that. I think a lot of coaches would, because, look, I say this every December, every January. You know, it's one thing to say, okay, you know, I'm at a big-time program. That's fine. The difference between a top 5 job and a top 50 job right now is minuscule, right? So it wouldn't surprise me if any coach, Butch being in this group, but any coach, you know, in the near future, starts to job jump in search of more stability rather than just being a big-time head coach, because you can be a big-time coach basically anywhere right now. I mean, Dan Mullen is a big-time coach, but Dan Mullen, I think, is in the best spot in the SEC, because he's making $4 million in Starkville, Mississippi, with no pressure. Like, those jobs don't exist. Like, those are really hard to find, and if you can find one and use, you know, a big-time program to find stability elsewhere, I think that's not a bad job decision, a bad career move, if it's the right spot.
Yeah, it's great money, Barrett, but you know, that's why Dan Mullen's got one foot out the door, is because he wants to win big, and you can't win big at Starkville. That's the problem, though. So,
well, I'm not sure Dan Mullen has one foot out the door anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
I think he certainly tried to have one foot out the door for a little while, but there are other issues at play in which maybe other schools decided maybe he wasn't the right guy for them.
Guys, listen to the podcast. It's Smothered and Covered. Follow him on Twitter, at Barrett Salee. Man, we always appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks for coming on with us.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff from Barrett. We're late getting a break, so we'll get to break and we'll react to some of that. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Heck yeah, you are. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. That's right, and I'm feeling like giving away some free stuff. So, caller number 5-615-737-1025. You're going to win a pair of tickets to the Southern Uprising Tour featuring Travis Tritt, Marshall Tucker Band, and the Outlaws at the Carl Black Chevy Woods Amphitheater, one of my favorite places, Fontenelle, on Sunday, July 2nd. You know I love it out there. Pair of tickets to go out to Fontenelle, see Travis Tritt, Marshall Tucker Band, and the Outlaws. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. Get you some. and get out to Fontenelle and enjoy that concert. It's going to be fantastic.
So Barrett Salee said something really interesting there about the difference between a top five job and a top 50 job being minuscule. And I agree with him and disagree with him all at the same time.
Okay.
I was looking at last year's coaching salaries across the board. The top five coaches last year made in excess of $5 million.
Jimbo, not bad work.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher was like 5.3. He was number five. And then Bob Stoops was 5.5. Urban Meyer was at 6. Alabama, Nick Saban was at 7. And Jim Harbaugh was at 9. Alabama is going to move up. Nick Saban goes to 11 this next year. So I think the difference between top five, and if you go down to 50, you know, you're looking at programs like Maryland, Missouri, Boston College, and Duke, and they're making $2.5 million. So there is a you know, you're getting paid twice as much, but you're still, the point is, I think his point that I agree with is that you can still make a really good living at a job that's like 40th in the nation, right?
Right.
Like you're gonna make $2 million, $2.5 million, maybe
so
$3 million.
What's Butch make?
Butch is in the, I want to say Butch is in the four range, and this year, he made 4.1. And there were, according to this is USA Today's coaching, this does not include private institutions, but there were 20 coaches that made in excess of $40 million last year, so $4 million last year. So that's his point, is that you can get paid at a high level at a lot of different places. It doesn't have to be a top five job now to get paid very well. The coaching salaries have escalated everywhere. The difference, and this is the reason in Dan Mullen, the reason I brought up Dan Mullen, and partly Barrett's totally right that Dan Mullen is totally safe because there's no expectation to win a championship. But he's still going to make $4 million and be a superstar on that campus. But he also wanted the Miami job, and he wanted the Georgia job, and he wanted a bunch of jobs. And then he got his friend, the athletic director, in there, and that helps calm some of the nerves a little bit. But the point is that you can't win championships at Mississippi. Why did James Franklin leave Vanderbilt? Because you can't win a championship at Vanderbilt. You want to play in front of 100,000 people and be the superstar? You got to go to a place like Penn State.
But I don't think that that's just about championships. I think it's about environment and vibe and number of people and
rock
star status.
But that's how you win championships.
But even if championships aren't part of the equation, I think if James Franklin knows that he can't win a championship at Penn State and he can't win a championship at Vandy, he still takes the Penn State job.
I don't disagree, but why does that rock star environment exist? Because that team competes for championships. You don't get 100,000 and you don't get 110,000 people coming every night to your home games if you don't compete at a high level. That just ain't going to happen.
At a high level, yes, but national championships, I mean, Penn State, while they're always good, when's the last time Penn State won? How many national championships have they won in our lifetime? I don't know the answer.
86 they won, or 85 they won, and then they should have, people will tell you that they should have won one in 93 when they went undefeated against. Or the point is that's a program you can win a national championship. They have won a national championship in the last 40 years. Who of those programs are there in the SEC? Well, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, it's the same list. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, LSU, Auburn, and Alabama. Those are the six, right?
Right.
Vanderbilt is not going to win a national title. And that's why James Frank, because Vanderbilt pays very well. And this is the point Barrett made. You can make great money. There's no difference between a top 10 program and a top 50 program necessarily from a money standpoint. Incrementally better, but money's not the issue anymore. If you're Dan Mullen and your goal is to win a championship, you're not going to do that at Mississippi State. You can do it at Georgia. You can do it at Miami. James Franklin, you're not going to win a championship at Vanderbilt. But if you want to play in front of 100,000 people and where football is king, where you win championships, you go to Penn State. They won a Big Ten title played in the Rose Bowl. That's what James Franklin wants to do, is compete for conference championships and get to places like the Rose Bowl and take his program to that level. And it's not a knock on Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt's never going to have that culture. They're never going to have 50 or 60,000 people packing their stadium every single Saturday and competing for SEC titles. It's just not part of their equation.
Yeah, you can't change the cultural indifference that I think has been sort of ingrained into a lot of Vandy at that high level. I'm not saying that all fans are different.
So,
I'm just saying that Vandy's never going to be that.
I agree with you. And that sentiment is why when you get coaches like Derek Mason at Vanderbilt, or let's say Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, or David Cutcliffe at Duke, right? Let's compare these guys. Northwestern and Duke are probably never going to compete for national titles ever. Duke almost won an ACC title. They played in the ACC title game one time, got smoked. And Northwestern has won a Big Ten title, maybe once in the last 25 years.
Right.
So those are some rare exceptions there. But for the most part, Northwestern, Duke, and Vanderbilt aren't going to win conference championships. They're not going to compete for conference championships. They don't get the same players. They don't have the same level of fan support. That's why hiring guys like David Cutcliffe, Pat Fitzgerald, and Derek Mason are the guys that are perfect for those jobs. They don't want to go on to win national titles. James Franklin is a guy that wants to go on and win a national title.
Sorry, can I cut in here for a second?
Please.
I am watching SportsCenter right now, and Lindsay Zarniak is wearing a Penguin costume.
Man, I was on a roll.
Because her Capitals, of course, and the No Capitals lost to the Penguins, and she's telling Dan Levitard. Well, I'm just listening to you guys as well. She's telling Dan Clearly. Levitard that she still, for some reason, believes in the Capitals, the No Capitals, when he just told her that she should have known when she made this bet that the Capitals would betray her.
It is a fantastic Penguin suit, though. I got to give Lindsay some credit. She's really owning what is a massive Penguin suit. I'm a little jealous.
Can I make a confession?
Yes.
I have that same Penguin costume.
I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah. Now that's
it's a good you're right, it's a strong Penguin costume.
You wear that to Crazy Town, and I'll buy your drinks. You wear that to Crazy
Town. I would though. I would.
I would buy your drinks if you wore that to Crazy Town. That's fantastic. I just like seeing everybody. They're paying off the bets. They're
that's the key. Ryan Porth needs to wear a dress.
Yeah,
you guys are really good at making people pay off their bets.
You got to pay off your bets, man.
Yeah, we are not.
We've
good
had
at that.
One bet that we've made, and we have yet to force him to pay it off. We've got to figure out a way to do that.
That's when it's your boss. It's hard to force your boss for the event to get into a dress.
But there's a certain level of adult code. Yeah. I want to be gender neutral on the man code.
It's just adult code.
It's adult code.
Okay.
It's when you bet something and you don't pay up, you're breaking adult code.
Yeah. Well, we'll work on that.
Grown up code.
We got to get to break. Obviously, we've been talking a lot about hope and expectations in the SEC. The same thing is happening in the NFL, and it's happening with the Titans. There's a lot of expectations, a lot of hope, and I don't know that everybody should have it. We'll break that down. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.